is so we can advertise it. It's great to pray together. It's great to read the Bible together as well. So if you'd like to turn your Bibles to Job chapter 28. We're in a series of sermons on Sunday mornings looking at the book of Job. And this morning we are in chapter 28. Significant section of the book of Job is a discussion between Job and his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. Those cycles of discussion have now finished. Job has finished those discussions in chapter 26, and now he's summing up in chapters 27 to 31, summing up his thinking, summing up his thoughts. And we're going to delve in to chapter 28 this morning. Job chapter 28. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place for gold that they refine. Iron is taken out of the earth and copper is smelted from the ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches out to the farthest limit, the ore in gloom and deep darkness. He opens shafts in a valley away from where anyone lives. They're forgotten by travelers. They hang in the air, far away from mankind. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, out of it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Its stones are the place of sapphires, and it has dust of gold. That path no bird of prey knows, and the falcon's eye has not seen it. The proud beasts have not trodden it. The lion has not passed over it. Man puts his hand to the flinty rock and overturns mountains by the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks and his eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams so that they do not trickle, and the thing that is hidden he brings out to light. But where shall wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its worth, and it is not found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it is not with me. It cannot be bought for gold, and silver cannot be weighed as its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Gold and glass cannot equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of crystal. The price of wisdom is above pearls. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where then does wisdom come, and where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Abaddon and death say, we've heard a rumor of it with our ears. God understands the way to it, and he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. When he gave to the wind its weight and apportioned the waters by measure, when he made a decree for the rain and the way for the lightning of the thunder, then he saw it and declared it. He established it and searched it out. And he said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to turn away from evil is understanding. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, we're in a series, like I mentioned, looking at the book of Job, and we're looking at suffering. The book of Job is the book of the Bible that discusses suffering most. Suffering is part and parcel of life. We cannot escape it. You will suffer. Now, when we experience suffering in our lives, there's two questions that we ask. Why and how? Why am I suffering? Why is there suffering? And how can I face it? How can I handle this suffering that I'm experiencing? Now, we looked at the question why at the start of our series. in chapters 1 to 3. And we're returning to that question why this morning. But we're looking at it in a slightly different way. You see, in some sense, we're looking at a deeper question than simply the question why. The question we're looking at this morning is, why doesn't God answer the question why? Job, like many of us, has asked that question why. Why is there suffering in the world? Why am I suffering? Why is this happening to me? But now he goes slightly deeper and says, why doesn't God give me an answer to the question why I'm suffering? He's wrestling with the whole concept of suffering and says, why is there no answer? Why has God not told me the answer? Why is he hiding it from me? You see, Job's been in discussion with his friends who he's called miserable comforters, windbags. And they have tried to answer that question of why. Their answer has been, Job, you reap what you sow. The reason you're suffering in life is because God is punishing you for being bad. But Job knows that's not the case. God knows that's not the case. At the start of the book of Job, God said about Job, he is righteous. He's living a good life. Everybody knew he lived a good life. And so that's not the answer to why Job's suffering. But Job's wrestling because he knows that's not the answer, but he hasn't got an answer. And God isn't giving him an answer. Job wants to understand. He wants to know how life works. He wants wisdom. He wants to know why stuff happens like it does. In many ways, that search for understanding, that search for wisdom is at the center of the whole of the book of Job. The book of Job is about the suffering believer in search of answers, in search of understanding, in search of wisdom. That is such an important question for us to wrestle with and to think about, especially when you feel that life is not fair. Why is my life like it is? Why is life not fair? Why does bad stuff happen? Why am I suffering? Why are there no answers to these questions? I want understanding. I want wisdom. That's what chapter 28 of the book of Job is all about. It's a meditation, a reflection on wisdom. And in this chapter, Job looks at three things. First of all, there is the search for wisdom. Then there is the source of wisdom. And finally, Job reflects on the secret to wisdom. So the search for wisdom, the source of wisdom, and finally the secret to wisdom. First of all, the search for wisdom. In verses 1 to 11, Job uses the imagery of mining as a metaphor for the search of wisdom. He says, men and women have used great skill and overcome lots of difficulties to mine precious things from the earth, to mine gold, to refine silver, to find sapphires and pearls and precious jewels. The miner has got a dangerous task, and his task is in search of something very valuable. And Job says, the search for wisdom is like that, but even greater. The search for wisdom is even more difficult, even more lonely, even more dangerous. Job has been there. He knows what it's like. And yet, it's a search for something far, far more valuable than gold or silver or precious jewels or money. It's a search for something which will give understanding to life. To know how to live. You see, it's one thing to have your life go as you want it, to have all the circumstances of your life go as you want them, to be successful, to be prosperous. Very few of us get there. And even those people who do get there and have their circumstances just as they want, we know they don't last. And so wisdom is far more valuable, because wisdom tells you how to cope in your circumstances, whatever your circumstances are like. Whether your circumstances are going well or whether your circumstances are difficult, wisdom will give you understanding. Wisdom will enable you to flourish no matter what circumstance you find yourself in. What is wisdom? Wisdom is understanding how life works. Wisdom isn't just knowing facts about life, knowing a lot of stuff. It's being able to apply those facts, because you understand the circumstances of life and how to apply the facts that you know in the circumstance that you're in. You see, if you have understanding, if you have wisdom, then you have the ability to cope no matter what your circumstance is. You see, wisdom is the ability to do the right thing at the right time, in the right way, for the right end, when there are no rules to apply. You see, there's some stuff in life where you don't need wisdom, you just need to know the rules. You know, if you are here this morning and you're thinking of leaving church this morning and going out and killing somebody, don't do it. It says in the Sixth Commandment, do not kill. If you're thinking of going out this morning and leaving church and committing adultery, don't do it. It says in the Seventh Commandment, do not commit adultery. You know, you don't need any wisdom whatsoever to know that you shouldn't do those things. You just need to know the rules. But how much of life do we need wisdom for? Because there's so much of life where the rules don't seem to apply. How do you parent your children? What job should you do? Where should you live? Who should you marry? How do you cope when your circumstances are good? How do you cope when your circumstances are awful? You see, there's so many situations that you and I find ourselves in where we need wisdom because the rules don't apply. See, wisdom's like driving a car. You know, when you're driving a car, you don't analyze everything that you see. I've been told that that's what happens on speed awareness courses. You know, you're given like a picture and you're told to analyze what's happening and where the dangers things are. You don't do that when you're driving a car. You just drive and try and do the right thing at the right time as you go along. The effect of wisdom in our lives is to do the same. The effect of wisdom is to enable you and me to do the right thing when the rules don't apply. To do the right thing at the right time in our lives. To be wise in any given situation means that you understand yourself. You understand the circumstance you're in. And you understand that life is complex and there aren't any easy answers. And with all that knowledge, it enables you to respond in the right way. And so having wisdom is so important for your life. It's especially important when you think life is not fair. It's especially important when you're suffering. Because having wisdom will give you an understanding of suffering. It will help you cope with it. Wisdom is very, very precious, and it's very hard to come by. So what's the source of it? Where can we go to find wisdom? If it's that precious and that difficult to find, where's the source of it? That's the question Job asks in verse 12 and verse 20. He says it twice. Where shall wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? It's the key question in the whole of this poem. It's what Job is wrestling with, what Job is searching for. And the first answer he gives in verses 12 to 22 is, you can't find it yourself. You can't find it with any human ability or skill. It's, verse 21, hidden from every human being. You can't get wisdom by reading lots of books or going to university or studying a lot or traveling the world. Maybe I can travel the world and find myself. Job says you can't. You can't buy wisdom. Maybe if I buy lots of counseling, or if I buy lots of education, or if I just buy lots of stuff, then I'll get wisdom. Rich people are wise, aren't they? You and I know that's not the case. There's no living person who can discover wisdom themselves. You can't become wise by living a good life. If I live a good life and I do all the right things, then maybe I will just grow in wisdom. It can't be found. It's valuable, it's precious, we need it, and yet it's hidden from us. But there's a second thing Job says in verses 23 to 27. God is the source of wisdom. God understands, he says in verse 23, the way to wisdom and its place. Only he has wisdom, because only God knows how life works. Only God is the one who sees the whole of life at the same time. And he sees the whole of life because he sees everything, because he made everything. Job gives the example of weather. You know, if there's one thing we don't understand, it's the weather. You know, we understand a bit about weather, don't we? You know, if there's a big dark cloud in the sky, it's going to rain. But, you know, you and I, we live in Manchester. We know it's random. Weather is random. You know, you look out and it's... My son says to me before he cycles to school, he says, Daddy, what's the weather going to be like today? And I'm like, it's Manchester. It's random. But not only is the weather random, but it's ambivalent. What I mean is, the same rainstorm which can help crops grow can also blow down houses that Job's children are living in and kill them. And so the weather seems random and seems ambivalent. The same thing which could be good can be bad. And only God sees it all. You see, wisdom is accepting that there is a pattern to the way life works. There is a pattern. You know, your dark cloud in the sky, rain will come from it. There's a pattern to the way life works. But only God can see the pattern. There's a pattern to the way life works, but only God can see the pattern. And that is so helpful for you and I when we suffer. When we ask that question, why am I suffering? Because it means, first of all, that you can live a good life, and yet bad stuff can happen to you. You know, there's a general pattern to how life works. We've mentioned this before. If you work hard, you're likely to succeed. If you're lazy, you're likely not to succeed. If you live a good life, then generally things will go well. If you live a bad life, then things will go belly up. If you raise up your child the way they should go, then generally speaking, that's the way they should go. But that's not always the case. You know, you can work really hard and get sacked. You can live a really good life and suffer greatly. You can raise your child and parent rightly, and they can go astray. You know, good people sometimes die young. You know, you can live a really bad life and make millions of pounds. Sometimes you can do everything right, life goes belly up. And that's what happened to Job. Job was doing everything right. He was living a good life. He was righteous before God, before other people. He was looking after people. He was living as God wanted him to live. And He was blameless, chapter 1 says. And yet, his life went sour. You can be good and life can go bad. But also, knowing that only God sees everything means that there are times in life where bad things can happen, and yet they can turn out for your good. Bad things can happen to you, and yet they can turn out for your good. You know, sometimes good things can happen to you, or things that you think are good, and actually they turn out bad. I remember reading about a guy who won the lottery and won millions of pounds and said, "It's the worst thing that ever happened to me." Won millions of pounds. Worst thing that ever happened to me. But sometimes the opposite's the case. There can be bad stuff can happen in your life. There can be suffering, there can be pain, and yet it can be turned for good and worked for good. You see that in the Bible story of Joseph. I was reading it this morning in my quiet time, and you know, what happened to Joseph? Well, he was beaten up by his brothers. He was sold into slavery, into Egypt. He rose up from that slavery and became the head of all the servants in Potiphar's house, who was a chief officer of Pharaoh. And then what happened? He was falsely accused and he went back into the prison. And then in the prison, he became one of the chief wardens in the prison. And so what's happening to his life? Well, things are going really well. Then things go really badly. Things are going really well, and things are going really bad. And what's happening to him? Why all that? Well, God was at work humbling him to turn him into the prime minister of the greatest nation in the world at the time. And so you look at it and go, this bad stuff that's happening to him and keeps happening to him again and again and again is turning out for good, not only for himself, but for the country of Egypt and for the whole world at the time who he saves. You see that pattern in the life of Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus Christ, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief and suffering all his life long. A man who always did the right thing, was blameless before God, blameless before other people. When people came to put charges against him in the end, they had to get people to lie. Someone who did everything right, and yet he died on a cross. And why? What was happening through that awful, awful event? He was saving the world. You see, there is a pattern to the way life works. Only God can see the pattern. And therefore, bad things, or things which we think are bad that are happening to us, can actually turn out for our good. Sometimes discouraging, disappointing, unexpected things happen to us, and yet God is doing something wonderful through them. Maybe you've experienced that in your life. Maybe you can point to certain situations and you're like, that was the worst thing that happened to me, and yet something wonderful came out of it. Maybe it strengthened you to become more gracious, or you stopped trusting in yourself. Or it broke that stubborn pride. Or it drew you closer to God. Or revealed to you something more of his love or grace. Or gave you a greater heart of compassion for other people. Or prepared you for something that God wanted you to do in the future. Or any number of other reasons that God has got which we don't know and understand. See, there's always a reason why stuff happens. Even though you and I don't know what that reason is. But it also means this. Suffering cannot be easily explained. Life is really complex. Only God understands life. Only he has wisdom. Only he understands how everything works. Only he understands suffering. You see, we don't. There's more to life than meets the eye. There's more to life than we can get with our senses. You know, there is a pattern to the way life works. We'd be idiots if we didn't think that. But if we say that we can see the whole pattern, and the whole of life and understand everything, then we'll be idiots as well. In fact, we'd be like Job's friends. You see, what was the problem with Job's friends, these miserable comforters? They said there is a pattern to the way life works. You reap what you sow. That's their philosophy. You do good, good stuff happens to you. You do bad, bad stuff happens to you. But what was the problem in their thinking? The problem wasn't their thinking that there is a general pattern to the way life works. The problem with their thinking is they thought they could see the whole pattern. They thought they could see everything, and only God can do that. They were putting themselves on God's seat. And at the end of the book, God comes along and rebukes them. He tells them off. He says, look, you guys have spoken badly about my servant Job because you said to him, you thought you could see the whole pattern of life, and you can't. You know, neat packaged solutions and explanations of suffering are wrong. Life is complex. Suffering is complex. There is a general pattern to the way life works, but only God can see that whole pattern. Only He is the source of wisdom. And so finally, what's the secret to wisdom? Is there any way that you and I can get wisdom? If only God has got wisdom, how can you and I be wise? How can we understand anything about how we should live and how we should do life? How do you get wisdom yourself? Well, God tells us in verse 28. Verse 28 is the first time that God speaks to people in the book of Job. And he says this. He says, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. You see, this is what Job was doing at the start of the book. And God is basically saying to Job, Job, you want to be wise? Do what you were doing in the beginning. Fear me, turn away from evil. So what does it mean to fear God? Well, to fear God doesn't mean to be terrified by him. You know, we often think of that. When it comes to fear, we think, oh, it means to be afraid. It doesn't mean that. One of the best examples of fear in the New Testament is when Jesus' disciples were in a boat with Jesus and a storm came. You might know this from Mark chapter 4. And the storm was so bad, they all thought they were going to drown. And then Jesus stands up and calms the storm. And it says that the disciples were afraid. Not afraid of the storm, although they had been, but there was a fear of Jesus. Because they saw that there was a power in their boat which was greater than the power of the storm that was going to drown them. That's what it means to fear. It means to stand in awe of God, to revere God, to see His holiness, and to stand before it. See, to fear God means, first of all, you need to know God. You can't fear somebody you don't know. To fear God means that you know Him. You're in a relationship with Him. And that comes through reading the Bible, through meditating on the Bible, through studying the Bible, because the Bible is what shows us God. If you want to see what God is like, you need to read the Bible. The Bible shows you God's holiness, shows you God's beauty, shows you God's power, shows you God's wisdom. But the Bible also shows you not only who God is, but it also shows you what God has done. How God loved the world so much that He sent His Son into the world to die. You see, the Bible shows us the wisdom of God in saving a broken and fallen world. You see, how on earth can this broken world be mended again? Well, God shows us. He says, I have sent my Son to die, to redeem this broken world, to redeem your broken lives. And how does He redeem them? Through the cross. I'm sending my Son, the Son of God, into the world to be King of the world and to reign as King through dying on a cross, to save the world by being broken. To the world, that just seems foolish. How can a king, how can God save the world by dying? And yet it is the wisdom of God. You know, Jesus is our wisdom. And we are to put our trust in him. That's what God wants us to do. In fact, that is the second part of fearing God. What does it mean to fear God? It means to know him, but it also means to trust him, to trust his word, to trust what he's done, to trust his love and grace, to trust his way of salvation, to put our trust in him and to say, I will trust you, because if you love me so much that you sent your son to die for me, if you love me so much that you weren't willing to withhold the most precious, most valuable thing in the world to you, your own son, but sent him to die on a cross that I might be forgiven, that I might be right with you again. If you're willing to do that for me, then I can trust you in my circumstances, because I know that you love me. And that if you're not willing to withhold your son from me, you're not going to withhold anything good. You're too wise to make mistakes, too loving to be unkind. I'm going to trust you in my circumstances, in my suffering, in my grief, in my pain, that you're going to work these things out for my good. That you're going to work these things out in a way which will honor you, which will help other people. You never make mistakes. You're always loving and kind. That's what it means to trust God in our grief, in our sufferings. That's what it means to be wise. To be wise means not to have all the answers, but to trust the one who does. You see, we ask the question of God when we're suffering, God, why is this happening to me? Why did you let my friend die? My loved one, my family member die? Why did you allow that to happen at work? Why have you allowed this in my life? It's awful. And God's answer is, look to me. Trust me. You're asking the question, why? You want wisdom. Seek me, because I'm the only one who is wise. Look to me, put your trust in me, and you will have wisdom yourself. Not as an object to possess, but as a person to trust. Not as a map to help you walk through life, a plan to get you through the difficult times, but as a person to hold your hand through them. You know, we find this really difficult. You know, when we find it really hard to trust, particularly when stuff goes wrong. You know, when things are smooth and easy and everything's sunny in our lives, it's easy to trust God. But when things are difficult and God's not answering those prayers and we're feeling the pain and feeling the grief, it's hard to trust. It's hard to hold God's hand. But that's what he offers us. You know, we're so often like a little child who, you know, you're teaching to ride a bike. And you say, okay, start pedaling. I'm going to hold the back of the bicycle and you'll be fine. I'm not going to let the bicycle fall. You'll be able to cycle okay. And they start off and they start pedaling and everything's okay. And then what do? As soon as there's a little wobble, they put their feet down. See, why do children do that? Because they don't trust that you're in control and have got that you want it to work out well for them and that you love them. They're saying, I want to be in control because I know what's best for me and I love me and I'm okay. And that's what we do. We say to God, life is difficult at the moment. Things aren't going the way I want, and so I'm going to take control of my life. And God says, trust me. Trust me. Look to me. I love you, and I want what's best for you. And I'm going to make sure that everything in your life is going to work out for good, even if you don't see how that's the case. You'll never get answers to all the why questions. So when you ask them, look to the one who has the answer. Trust him. Then you'll be wise. Let me pray. Gracious Father, when we suffer in our lives when things don't go the way they should, the way we want, and we so easily murmur and grumble and mourn and want to take control of our circumstances. Lord, help us, instead of doing those things, to look to you, the one who understands, the one who knows how life works, and to trust that you are working these things out in our lives for our good, even if we don't see how. Help us to trust you, the one who has the answers. Help us to trust you to work things out in a way which will lead to heaven. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.